to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 227. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me.
Wow.
For the first time in, I think, a month. I believe it's been a month.
It's been a while. When you said you thought it had been 2 months earlier, I was like, really? But I couldn't, I didn't have a clear recollection in my head when the last time we sat down and did one of these. So I was almost like, okay. But then it felt long. It felt long. But you're right. I mean, when you said, so it would have been fight week.
Yeah.
International fight week. When we had Simon.
Me, you, and Simon Head sat down together. And that's why I couldn't remember, because I remember Simon was there. But yeah, I mean, Edmonton and San Antonio.
Yeah, because I was editing. So half it, I was like, go ahead, Simon.
That's it. Exactly.
Like, Simon's never had, he's never at a loss for words. So that you two would be fine.
Oh, no, he's good. He's good. But yeah, so as far as just me and you sitting down and doing this, first time in like 8 weeks, it's just been the two of us, and it's here in the same place simultaneously. By
the
way,
crazy. That can't be right. That doesn't feel right.
At the Casa de Cold Coffee, of course. A beautiful August afternoon, August 1st.
As you'll see, I started doing a little bit. Remember the clippings, the trimmings?
Sure.
I started cutting those up so I could put them in the trash can. So I did that this morning. I pulled out the old chainsaw. Felt very...
You mean the staff did?
Oh, yeah, the staff. Yes.
You oversaw it.
Yeah. My arm is really tired from cracking that whip. It wasn't from... holding this one arm saw, trying to hold the thing. It was so bad. Like, to the point where I was like, don't fucking cut yourself. Don't cut yourself.
Casa de Cold Coffee. The grounds are looking clean.
Yes. Yeah, I've been lately, the birds are back. I need to get I need to have the staff get us a power washer because lately I've been taken to. I like feeding the birds, and I have like a little bird bath out there. So a lot of times when I'm working, I'm watching the birds or whatever, just chilling. I know it's like I'm getting old.
You're turning into like a crazy cat lady or
I'm
something.
I'm like, look at all the birds! Look at all the birds! There's little birds and bigger birds, and but I sit there, and because at like Smith's, man, you can get a giant bag of like bird seed for like $9. So I'm just like, oh man, let's feed the birds here in Vegas, whatever. So I put bird feed, and you can see the difference. There's like little birds on the big birds, but now the little fuckers are even when they're up on the power lines, they shit down on the far side of the pool. So I need to go and power wash that stuff. So when I was over there clipping the things, I was like, it's really kind of disgusting over there.
And you've brought it upon yourself.
Well, no, the power line up there, they've already been doing that. But over by the palm tree to the left, yeah, there's a little bit more on the ground because that's where I spread it a little bit. So I'm like, all right, fuckers. I like seeing you, but I don't want to have to start cleaning up after
I'm so glad I'm here at the Casa de Cold Coffee to intervene right now because I feel like we're losing you. You're working here all day by yourself, and you're making friends with the birds.
Dude,
outside
sometimes I can go out there, literally this is when I know it's getting bad, because I
you
was
haven't
like,
named them have
no,
you?
No, but I was taking water to the little bird bath thing,
right?
A lot of the fuckers never left, you know, like normally they'll fly away. They're just like,
hey bro,
it's him, what's up? They know that I'm not a threat now, so that it's cool, but it's also like, all right, you've done this a little too often.
And now they're whistling at their other crew, like, hey, come on, this sucker right here, he won't do anything to
this
us.
This softy is giving us seed, he's giving us water to bath.
You might have to go shoot one just to, like, keep it even.
It real.
Yeah.
If I had a BB gun, I probably could. Everything else I have would be illegal to do.
Oh, man, that's funny. All right, well, beautiful day here, beautiful August afternoon.
Rained yesterday.
I got it bad. I haven't even talked to you about this. Like, the flash floods by some of the streets by my house were impassable.
Yeah,
it was
I actually saw something on the news. It was called at Mountain's Edge. It's turned into Mountain River's Edge or something.
It was nuts, man. It was the craziest thing. It was probably only for like 20 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for this 20 minutes, it was just a wall of water pouring down. And, you know, they warn you about flash floods here in Vegas, which always, to me, when I first moved here, seemed weird. Yeah. Like, we're in a desert. Why are we worrying about
floods? Everybody's like, desert. Everybody assumes that the ground is just immediately going to swallow up the water. But that's not how it works because it's so dry, the water can't seep down.
So it just pools up.
And it just runs.
Dude, it was crazy,
downhill.
Man. Yeah, it was crazy. It was, but like 20 minutes after it stopped, everything's drained off. Everything's good to go. Sun came out, burned it all off.
That's what they said all the grasshoppers came for, because of a lot of the wetter weather that we've been having. Because we've had more water already this year than we're supposed to have like all year long. So That's why they say some of the
grasshoppers. It is like some biblical
come.
Plague stuff here. The
that
grasshoppers.
That was the first thing that went to my head.
Floods.
Was, yeah. Oh, shit. What's next?
All right.
Zombies.
Listen. Well,
people coming back from the dead. Don't put people in caves.
You never know. Well, speaking of biblical plagues, I guess we won't go too far into it, but you got back from Edmonton, which I pick up was probably your – would you say it was the worst work trip you've ever had?
Worst work trip. It, just in the terms of – not necessarily like – had nothing to do with the fights
sure.
or the content. It just literally, that was the sickest I've ever been on the road.
We won't get into too many details, but basically it sounds like food poisoning and
yeah,
all that entails.
It had to have been, which is weird because I only ate at one place and some other guys ate at the same place and had wings. I think it either was just the sauce on the wings or something, but.
Put them on blast. Who was it?
It was the place called Staten, Maine.
Staten, Maine.
Staten, Maine. It was a decent little place. I mean, like, good. They had a cider that was absolutely delicious. So I was thinking, like, oh, man, my first meal, I'm having these wings, which were, like, $5 for a pound of wings. And then the beers were on sale.
Oh.
So I was like, dude, this place is great. And then literally the next day, my stomach was just in knots and cramps. And I haven't had to – I haven't, like, vomited – in so long.
I said
and
we
that
weren't
going
to get into too many details.
I know. Well, I won't give you too many details. But the fact of, like, unless the last time was maybe when I was super, super drunk. So it's like you just
right.
don't do it. I mean, like, even when I get really sick, I very, very rarely ever get to that point. So for that to happen, I was like, what the hell happened?
So bad you had to skip the official weigh-ins? I guess
yes.
Shout out to Mike Bond for kind of scrambling and putting something together. You know, obviously our coverage wasn't as good as it would be with you there, but
no,
we made
that's
it happen.
What I tried to give him a heads up in far enough advance, like, bro, like this was – that was the worst night I've had in a long time. I mean, let's just say it was this bad. I was sitting on a toilet, the door barely opened. Or barely, it opened, but it was open to the point where it was, like, almost right against the tub. But, like, the toilet was right there, so literally I could rest my head on the door. So I took a fucking towel and at one point propped it up on the door because I was so tired. It was, like, literally every 20 minutes.
So you're like, dude, this...
And as time was going on, I was like, oh, my God, this is not getting better.
I'm just better off sleeping on the toilet so I save myself some time.
Just to save myself from getting up. Just to have to go because I didn't want to like fucking like finally fall asleep and then like wake up and have shit myself or something. So it was the point I just couldn't sleep. And then as it was getting closer and closer to early weigh-ins, I was like, bro, I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm just not going to be able to do
right.
this. Like I physically can't function away from having to run to a facility within 20 minutes. So I was like,
that's
and
crazy,
it was
man.
Even less. So yeah, it was. Hands down, the worst time I've ever been sick on the road. Even my time in the UFC when I got really bad from a trip in Brazil, it got me after I got back home.
Right.
That was the worst. That was like 2 to 2.5, almost 3 weeks nonstop. It was bad. I
Whoa.
Dropped a lot of weight. But I dropped over 10 pounds.
10 pounds.
Over 10 pounds. Because I know it was over because when I got back, my stomach felt better, and I actually was able to eat a couple meals.
Right.
I ate, and I was like, okay, I think I'm back, and I'm good to go.
And you were still 10 pounds lighter.
I was 10 pounds lighter after I'd eaten.
Good
so,
Lord.
Yeah, who knows how much. Not the way you wanted it. I always used to joke, like, it wouldn't be great if you could just take a fucking pill and shit, like, 30 pounds, and you just like, hey, 30 pounds gone. But it was literally I had depleted all the water in my body. Like, it was like – I don't know what the fuck, but it was...
Well, that's what happened to our fearless former leader, Dan Stopp. You remember he ended up...
I do
he got
remember
super
something
sick.
Like that.
He got super sick, so sick that he dropped like 30 pounds.
Yeah.
And then he was just like, well, I've already dropped 30. Why don't I keep going?
I do remember
It basically started like a healthy
yeah.
rebellion for him.
I have actually thought about... I was like, maybe I'll have some fruit. I had an orange earlier and trying to eat a little bit better.
And then
I
showed up with a case of award-winning Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Beer. I was even just telling him, I was like, man, I don't really even drink when I'm not on the road. But now I
you know.
Road shows are
it's a Thursday
it's kind of
afternoon. We're getting to do the day thing. I got to go to bed early. I got to wake up for a one championship, which starts at 2 a.m. Pacific. We won't talk a lot about that because by the time this podcast comes out, most people, it'll probably already be over. Yeah, but I don't know. I guess fight fans, make sure it's on your radar. If it's not, man, to tune in. I think they replay them at night on TNT. But the return of Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, that's right. This is Eddie Alvarez.
That's right. The return of Demetrius Johnson. Arjan Bueller makes his one championship debut. Yushin Aokami's on there against the undefeated James Nakashima. So
literally just throwing everybody.
Yeah, basically they put it all together. But, yeah, this is actually a really good one championship card. So I'm going to get up at 2 a.m. in the morning and
is that
cover
pay-per-view?
That. No, they don't do pay-per-view. So the prelims, even though it's on BR Live, it's free.
Okay.
Yeah, if you watch it live. I think if you want to watch the replay, you have to pay for it, but or you have to wait for it to be on TNT. But they realize it's a weird time.
I like how they use those names.
Dude, they have to have just like a random name generator.
Dawn of Heroes.
The names are pretty funny. But this is a good card. I think it's one of the better one championship cards, so I'm kind of excited to watch it. All right, listen, I want to get a couple quick takes out of Edmonton.
World. You need like Dawn of Heroes. Okay,
You got a future in this. all right, I know that you recovered enough to be around on Fight Night, so I wanted to get kind of your thoughts from being there on scene. Give me your take on Max Holloway because I think we know what's next. Listen, great fight from Max Holloway. Frankie Edgar, I thought Frankie Edgar only won one round, to be honest with you, but I don't think Frankie fought bad. It's just that Max is, I think, the best featherweight in the world right now. I want to see the fight with Alex Volkanovski, and knowing that you and I are going to be in Melbourne, especially we've already got our flights booked down there for that. I booked
Melbourne.
That earlier today. Knowing we're going to be there, I would really like to see Max Holloway versus Alexander Volkanovski at that card. I think it would be an awesome, kind of a second, big fight for that card. But I don't know, man. Do you think it would be too soon for Max?
What did you feel?
Yeah, what did you feel from him? Because I know his words didn't rule it out.
Right.
But did you get the feeling that he was just saying what he needed to say or that he's down for it?
I bet. I mean, if the money was right, I guarantee he'd be down for it. But I think he needs to give himself some time to let his body kind of just get good. I mean, I think it is a hard cut. I mean, like he made it. He went out there. He had the towel. He showed his junk.
This show was junk.
I don't know. Like the whole week, he was good. He didn't have the same like when we saw him before when he was real depleted. And they had the whole thing where they thought he was concussed or something. It was that whole
right.
Weird,
oh yeah.
Didn't do anything along those lines. Didn't show any things like that. There was a couple people that thought he looked funny when he was walking into the venue, but it might have just been swagger. And at that point, he had already been rehydrating, and he didn't seem to show any issues when it came to fight night. I mean, man, Max just his jabs and his striking was just piecing up
so good.
Frankie, it just what was crazy is that Frankie didn't look like Frankie in there in the sense like he didn't seem to have the success that he normally does. I don't feel like he ever really got going too
right.
much. So like giving him a round is being fair, but it's also being kind of generous because I could have thought that I only gave
him round one, and I think it's only because I thought Max started kind of slow.
Right.
I think round one, and even then, a 50-45 card, I would not have argued against.
Yeah.
I just thought round one was pretty close, and I felt like Max was kind of slow starting, and Frankie got enough work in there. But yeah, after that, 2 through 5, I saw some people saying, what was it, round 3 or 4 was close. I didn't think any of them were close
after
one.
Some people said that. I didn't think so either. I thought when you looked at it, like the more devastating shots are coming from Max every time Frankie kind of come in there. I mean, I did like Frankie. The way Frankie, I like it that he doesn't really a lot of time just throw that one jab. I mean, his hands are so quick that it's always 2 or 3 shots.
Right.
You know, nice 1-2, and he's getting in there. So he was doing some good work, and I think when you see that overall in a round, I can see where somebody's like, he landed a lot of shots, but Max's jabs and his stuff just look so much more devastating. It just felt like it was like, I don't want to say the word clinic, because clinic makes it always sound like that was just a one-sided
like you're embarrassing throbbing. Somebody.
And it wasn't like that. But he clearly had his way, and he got more comfortable as the fight went on. You know, he started getting that whole drop the hands to the side, start nodding his head a little bit, almost like he was going to start jawing. But I think there was too much respect between him and Frankie for him to talk shit during it. So I don't think he really went that route. But about the third round, he was in that full-on mode. And at that point, I mean, it was done.
Look, man, Frankie's a legend, no question about it. You cannot question Frankie as a fighter and just as a human being, man. He's as good as they come. I hope he'll try 135. Again, he's always said he doesn't think it would be a problem for him to get there. And when you see him next to Max Holloway, they looked like they were in different weight classes. So I don't know how hard it would be, especially at his age, to get to 35. But if it's not something that's going to put his health at risk, I would like to see him at 35. I think he could still turn in a few good fights at 35.
I think so, too. But, man, like, doing that sort of thing, that's complete, like, lifestyle change. I think that's not something that he would easily, at least thinking about how Frankie addressed these things, it's not like he – I don't ever really see him as just like, all right, fight week, we need – that's when we're going to drop the weight. Nah. He always comes in pretty close and then just finishes it off. But to do it at 135, he would literally have to, I think, change his life and make it about being at that lower weight. And I'm not sure at this point in his career, after what he's already done, if he's willing to put himself through that much just to try to get at maybe another weight class, just to try to maybe make another run.
Because there's still, I mean, you can still put him against anybody in the division.
Yeah, I mean, he could get there and do fights. Just, you know, I don't know, man. To try to just go into another thing and then try to build himself up, unless, you know, you're gonna sort of just automatically move him up towards the top five. And is that fair to anybody? And then, you know, does that mean, do you want to make Frankie go through 3 or 4 fights at a struggling weight class to get to a title? And I just don't think he wants.
You give him like a number one contender fight right away. If he can do it.
If he could do it.
We'll see. We'll see what he decides to do.
I bet he could do one fight, but I just don't think he'd want to make that his new division long term, because I just think he would literally have to redo how he lives. And I just think at this point in career, he doesn't want to make it that hard of himself. You know, he's too far. He's done too much. I think he would rather do another one like this where it's like stay up near the top of the division to make it seem like he could be back at it, but I don't know.
I don't think he gets another title shot at 45.
I honestly don't think Frankie's got much longer in it, and that's not saying that he's done. I think Frankie's
probably been around for a long time.
He's been a long
7
time.
7 hours in the octagon?
I wouldn't
that's
be
insane.
Surprised if he's only got like another maybe year or
it's probably about right.
Two. I mean 2 is probably being really generous, because I think he's got a lot of opportunities to do other things, and he's already got other things going on. I just don't know how long he wants to keep pushing himself to do a lot of these things, and that's why I don't think 135 is going to be the right one, because that's a long play, and I mean that's a younger man's game.
It's true.
And Frankie's he's already paid his dues. He doesn't need to do that sort of thing. I think he can make the money he needs to get a couple more fights, and then just fucking ride out on that horse, man, and just live good.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, selfishly, I would like to see Holloway and Volkanovski in Australia, you know, but I don't I want only if Max is 100%, man. I don't want to see Max suffer, sacrifice. I mean, he's done enough, you know what I mean? So only if it's at 100% would I like to see that happen, but I think it'd be phenomenal. I did want to ask quickly about the Cyborg thing. I mean, Cyborg and Dana, this feud that continues to go on between them. You know, the thing that frustrates me about it is I feel like they're not being honest with each other, at least honest with the language. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I think they're both.
She seems to be a lot more honest and open, you know, now. I mean, like, maybe when they're in front of each other, but when he's not in the room and she's talking.
The post-fight speech was powerful.
Like, I love it. I mean, like, she is not pulling any punches, and I think that's coming from a point where she knows her worth. She knows what she needs to see, and if she's not going to – she's willing to just beat around the bush anymore, because I think she probably knows that she can go to a Bellator or she can go something else, you know, maybe not be – might not be the amount of money, so that's why she probably wants to stay UFC, because the money's going to be better there, but –
Well, yeah,
I just
right
feel like it's coming from Dana's end, where Dana he says, oh, no, we're good. But, you know, she's right. I mean, they can't go back in the past and fix the stuff, but she almost wants him to never badmouth or never say anything.
Right.
And he says that about everybody. Yeah. At one point in time, he talks shit about, you'll hear him talk shit about maybe even say, like, Adesanya didn't look good in the first and second and blah, blah, blah. But
he's not trying to cut him down.
He's just
being honest.
But I guess what's weird in the terms of some of the other ones is that Cyborg, unfortunately, a lot of people picked on her looks. They said a lot of shit that they crossed outside of just talking about a bad fight performance, you know, and that's the point I think she's the most upset, is that you guys are fucking with my brand, and you're like, if you're going to talk shit about me, how's that going to help me going forward, you know? If you're going to treat one particular fighter decent, why don't you treat everybody decent, you know? And
well, here's the thing is that you're right. If I had to put more of the blame in one place, I'd probably put it on Dana. Because I will say, like, the fact that Dana says she's not interested in the fight, I know what he's getting at. And we talked about it before. What he's getting at is that she's not willing to sign a new deal to take the fight. So in his mind, that means you're not interested in the fight because you're not willing to sign a contract. That's not completely inaccurate, but it's not true either. Like, she is interested in the fight.
Right.
She just wants fair compensation for it. She wants to, you know, work out a new deal for it.
So and on a time frame.
And a time frame,
and that's the thing, too. Is I think a lot of times he's like, I offered that fight three different times. And, well, if she's not ready to fight, don't talk shit that she wasn't ready to fight. You know, like, that's another point. Her, like, if she feels her most optimal fighting, say, just for shits and giggles, is October, don't try to force her to fight in August and then... Say she didn't want the fight.
Yeah,
because then you are tarnishing the brand.
No, I didn't want the fight in August.
We couldn't get the fight. We couldn't get the fight to work. We're still in the works. Blah blah blah. You don't need to bring up the fact of, oh, she didn't agree to it.
Right.
You know, like, it's got to be a good fight, a good time frame for both. But don't shit on a fighter because they didn't meet your initial thing. I'm sure there's a reason for it.
But here's the thing is that, and I think you're dead right about that, and it frustrates me that, you know, which is why we asked Dana the other
day.
And
it happens all the time. They say that all the time about fighters when they can't can't fight their fight frame. Just say they didn't want my fight.
Yeah, that's not
true. Didn't want to fight. They're scared.
Yeah. But that bothers me. But here's the other thing, too, is that I will say this, and I'm not trying to defend Dana here, but Cyborg does not make it very easy either. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we had this moment, and it's like, hey, we're going to make this fight, and then what? 10 minutes afterwards, she's taking to social media to shit all over him. You know what I mean? Like, and I understand that's her right to do it, and I'm not blaming her. But it's like, I just feel like both parties could do something better to make this thing work. I mean, I don't think it's 100% on Dana or the UFC. I don't think it's 100% on Cyborg. And I wish Cyborg would stop with the attacks. Like, what good does that do? Like, have those conversations behind closed doors. Have them, but have them behind closed doors. How many times have we seen if fighters try to contest something in the media, Dana hates that stuff.
Sure.
He hates it, and it never goes well. But have it behind the scenes, and maybe we can address it a little bit. You know what I mean? So I wish she would change her approach a little bit, but I wish Dana would also change his approach as well, because I think what he's saying isn't a lie, but it's not 100% accurate either. Yeah. I don't think it's doing anybody any good.
But I know we have seen instances, and I was trying to even think of a couple of times, whether it would be Colby or... You know, some of these cats lately have been quick to talk shit about how the UFC's treated them, and they've still been rewarded. You know, I think there is something about, you know, the squeaky wheel getting the grease.
All right,
you know?
But notice that Colby, and I think it was Dan Lambert, who's his manager, who has known Dana forever,
right.
Colby really doesn't talk bad. He's settled down a little bit. He's not talking about Uncle Fester and this and that, right?
Right.
And what did Dana come out and do? Dana said this week, all right, if Colby wins, he's got to be next. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, I think... You have those conversations behind the scenes. It doesn't mean that you can't, you know, tell Dana, I don't appreciate what you did, or I think this is wrong, or I think you did it the wrong way. I just think contesting it in the media doesn't help your case.
Yeah. Definitely goes, I guess, it just depends. I mean, I think sometimes it probably could be useful, but you're right. I mean, you know, it's probably not the best to air all your dirty laundry, but at some point, you probably just get frustrated and you feel like, I got to at least go on record.
Something.
Because if you don't, then you just look like, all right, I'm sitting back and taking it. So, I mean, and I know we've talked about in the past. I mean, I commend fighters that are willing to stand up
Absolutely.
For themselves. You know, I mean, it's the only way it's going to happen. But, yeah, I think there's ways you could do it tactfully.
There you go.
And then at some point, maybe you just get frustrated and you say, fuck it. I'm just gonna put it on blast, and
none of us would,
you know,
none of us would ever blow up at our boss and say something out of line, right?
We'd never
do that.
Never. But.
All right. Well, hopefully that gets worked out. Because listen, I will say this. I will say this. Cyborg facing Julia Budd in Bellator would be pretty cool.
Yes.
And the Bellator Ryzen relationship is pretty entertaining as well, because that means that now you can see Cyborg go over to Japan, you can see some matchups, and obviously, you know, they could throw out some crazy matches, and there's stuff you could do. So I will say,
and
I
Bellator
think Cyborg
louder at a box too.
If I mean, like, yeah, maybe you could make the Clarissa Shields things happen. So I to be honest with you, I like Cyborg's opportunities on the outside, and I wouldn't hate to see her leave the UFC, but I do feel like the biggest fights, the biggest money is going to be in the UFC.
I agree. And she's still a great draw for the UFC. People love seeing her. But I also feel like, man, just... I was so surprised how well Felicia... this, you know, everybody was saying, like, oh, look at the young... the young baby girl coming in here, and Felicia just took everything. She was so tough, and it just made you wonder, like, man, Cyborg used to just get in there and just demolish all these girls, man. Nobody fucking stood a chance, and then Amanda just showed how human she was and that, in fact, she can be knocked out. And now everybody believes, and then you got Felicia who just came in with no fear at all and took every bit of Cyborg stuff and actually damaged Cyborg right from the get-go. And it just, man, I just...
Well, that cut could have changed everything, couldn't
it?
It really might have changed everything.
I just kind of feel, part of me feels like there's Dana in the back of his mind, like, is it time? Is it time to let it go? Has she already peaked and on her way down?
That's a good point, man. He always says, you know, I'm not looking to hold on to fighters that are going from 10 to, you know, from 1 to 10. I'm looking when they're trying to go from 10 to 1.
And I think this, I feel like at this point, and I hate even saying this.
He feels like
this,
maybe it's time.
I have a feeling he probably feels like it's time, because I even think about it and think that she's not gonna take the belt away from Amanda.
No.
Somebody the other day argued with me and thought it was such a fluke. I was like, dude, I think Amanda's going to do it again. And they were
Amanda
like, you're crazy, man. That was a fluke. I was like, how do you think that was a fluke, man? Like,
Amanda's on another level.
She's on
right
a whole
now.
Other level, and I just don't see Cyborg beating her. And then when I see Cyborg fight these other girls and these other girls who I think Amanda would absolutely – I thought Felicia was super sweet and did an awesome job. Amanda would fucking starch Felicia. For somebody to think that, oh, okay, Cyborg who goes in there and beats her by decision, and she beat her handedly. Like, Cyborg's hands were just great, and she pieced up Felicia.
And by giving Felicia credit, and I've seen some people argue that, oh, it wasn't a close fight. No, it wasn't a close fight. It was a very clear one-sided fight. We're just praising the durability and the toughness.
Right. And, like, just seeing Amanda right now, I'm like, man, I don't see how that fight wouldn't be the same way. I just don't see the same Cyborg that I've been so enamored about for these past years. Like, I was always like, Cyborg's fighting? Okay, I don't even need to see the opponent. I'm picking her. And now, you know, I start looking at the opponents because it doesn't feel like the same Cyborg. Just like when Ronda came up. Ronda was she was levels above everybody until they figured it out.
Right.
People are figuring out Cyborg now, and I feel like Cyborg's durability has changed as well. Because this, even when I said before, I was like, the only way people are going to start beating Cyborg is you're going to be seeing a lesser Cyborg, a depleted Cyborg.
The mystique is gone. The mystique is gone, that's for sure. I mean, the people being beat before they got in there.
Right. Like, that's not going to happen.
Felicia Spencer was not beat before she got in there. And it's not because she's some, just psychological giant that she was able to beat. The mystique, the aura isn't around her anymore.
Right.
Still dangerous, though.
Oh, she's still super dangerous.
But I wouldn't pick her against Amanda.
I don't think so either.
We'll see what happens. I hope she stays, but I will say
she will do awesome in Bellator.
The options on the outside would be pretty cool.
What's great is for us, we cover Bellator.
Yep, exactly.
I know there's a lot of organization, other outlets that don't seem to go to a lot of the Bellators. So
we'll still get to see her fight.
We'll still get to see her fight. So it's like, even though we're not going to, even if we maybe didn't see in the UFC, we would still see her fight. So I'm still stoked. I mean, it's not like she's going away anywhere. She just might go make some more money and get a lot of opportunities. When they started talking about, when she said something about boxing, and it was almost like she was hinting on it, I was like, dude, it just stinks of Bellator. Like, it's perfect for Bellator, you know, and I almost want her to go to Bellator because I know that she can pull off, if she wanted to, she could fucking take a boxing match, a kickboxing match, and an MMA fight all underneath the Bellator.
They don't
umbrella.
Do a ton of Bellator kickboxing cards anymore, but still
they
do some. And she'd be a great draw.
Or she could partner over to something, and they'll do like this some cross promotion. Like, Bellator is doing really cool shit right now with a lot of these other organizations. That it's just cool. The possibilities are endless. So it's really cool.
It's funny when the discussion first started. I was like, man, they got to find a way to keep her. She deserves to be in this UFC. She belongs to be in the UFC. But honestly, the more I think about it, because I don't think she'll beat Amanda, and because I do think there's more creative opportunities and probably easier opportunities, if we're being honest. Now, Julia Budd doesn't count as an easy opportunity. That would be a test.
That'd be a fun fight.
But I do think, honestly, the more I think about it, the more I discuss it, I think her best option probably is to leave.
I would like to see her go, just because I would love to see her be able to do the things she wants. Go to an organization that's willing to bend over to give her what she wants.
Right.
And that's what I think Bellator would do.
That's true.
They would say, what do you want?
Because she instantly becomes one of the biggest stars.
Huge star and a huge fucking draw. I mean, she is a good draw. I mean, is she I mean, it's crazy. Half the stuff when people were watching, you know, when I felt like there were fans there, they were super, super stoked to see her. I mean, like, it's fucking Cyborg, man. I mean, like, if there isn't ever, like, say if there was, like, a division of, like, if they wanted to do, like, a women's wing of the UFC Hall of Fame, she's a guaranteed fucking
deserves pick. To be in there. Yeah, absolutely deserves to be
right.
in there.
And that's the thing, like, I mean, if they can't find a fucking way, just fucking make a women's wing and put Cyborg in the fucking Hall of Fame, because what she's done for the sport, and just the fact that her name, I mean, like, even my, I always go and say, like, if my family knows who they are, they've fucking done something.
Right.
And my family knows who Cyborg is. So it's like, dude, put her in the Hall of Fame because the Hathaway family knows who Chris Cyborg is. So she deserves, because she's crossed over.
That'll be the guy every year. Kenny, real quick, man, can you run a few names by your family, please? This is
yep, they know this one. Okay, that's good.
Hey, Kenny, this is Dana. Just got a couple quick ones here for you. I'm going to line these out if you can just run them by your family. All right, listen, I want to plug something real quick. I started this thing earlier this year called the Rookie Report, and basically I grade every week the UFC newcomers after their debuts,
uh-huh.
and we've been doing it long enough now, and it does decent traffic. It doesn't do huge. I get it. You know, the debuting fighters aren't the people necessarily that people care the most about. But I did want to plug something real quick because I've been doing it long enough now that some of these fighters are getting their second fight in, right? One of those guys, Armin Saryukin, I gave him an A in his debut, even though it was a loss. And, of course, he picked up a decision win over Olivier Aubin-Mercier. So that was a big win for his second
tough.
Fight. Oh, man, he's tough. He's going to be a problem
like
in that division.
Young.
23 years old.
Yeah, he's
look out
he's,
for that kid.
Yeah, he is on his way up.
Another one, Vivian Araújo. I gave her an A-plus in her debut. And, of course, she picked up a decision win over Alexis Davis. That's a big win for her there.
Yeah, that's
I think
a big win.
She's going to be a problem as well in the women's flyweight division. I think she's going to be around. She talked about going back down to strawweight where she competed most of her career, but I think she's going to stay at flyweight, and I think she's going to be up there pretty soon as a top contender.
That's good. Straw would be good, too. I mean, like, yeah.
I think strawweight's deeper, though, but this is good. But here, on the flip side of things, Sungwoo Choi, no disrespect, but I gave him a C+. You know, not terrible, but not great. I gave him a C+. He lost. He suffered a decision loss to Gavin Tucker in his second fight. So the two that I gave A's picked up wins. The one that I gave a C suffered a loss. So, hey.
Wow. So your scoring's working.
Keep an eye on those rookie reports, man. I got some, you know, I'm just telling you what I see.
What'd you think about Jillian Robertson?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, sir.
I love Jillian. I think she is, like, the cutest, like, funnest, and she looked like a whole different fighter. I mean,
well, let me tell you something, Cole Coffee.
All right, tell me something.
We don't never, at one time, I think we spent more time trying to plan what we were going to talk about. But after 227 consecutive weeks of speaking MMA together, we don't really have rundowns or share or anything like that. But I pulled Jillian Robertson's audio.
Oh,
this
did you?
Yes, I did for this week's episode. I wanted to do a and a half last week, but of course you were ill and I didn't want to make you have to do extra work. But I had saved her audio because I'll tell you, I was so impressed by her. I think she is phenomenal. And I think her personality and her just like her voice is hilarious. She's got this like
she is
high pitched voice. She finishes every sentence like with a
like with a smile. She is infectious. Like she has like a like her smile and her laugh. She's like same thing like a lot when you used to like Sage. You just like you finish talking to him and you're just like God, I feel like more sunlight came in the room or something. But like Jillian has that effect where she just. Very happy.
And she's a killer.
And she looked – that was, I think, the most dominant performance I've ever seen her do.
She is
like,
phenomenal.
She literally took a step up from where – it's not like she was bad or that she wasn't fully complete, but she looked so good. Like, I thought her striking and I thought everything was just – impressive. I picked Froda. Froda, I've seen at Invictus.
Oh,
I've seen the shit.
Yep.
She's a fucking beast.
She's vicious.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, sorry, Jillian. Gosh, I don't want to see Jillian get beat up. I'm like, oh, I feel bad. And I was like, as it was going on, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I was like, Jillian is a
monster. I think she's phenomenal. I think she's the total package, man. I think she can fight. And yes, this voice and this attitude are
and
infectious.
Her crazy shit. Her crazy neon red hair. is like brighter than life.
It's amazing. So listen, usually this far in the week, I don't go back to the weekend before to play audio, but this is short. It's only a couple of minutes. But yeah, I was so impressed by Jillian, and I have been in her career, but I think this was a breakout moment that I had to share this. So here is some backstage audio from UFC 240. This is Jillian Robertson after a win.
Jillian, congratulations for UFC wins and for finishes. This must be a pretty exciting start for you to your career here.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely huge, especially my first TKO in Canada, my home country, so it feels absolutely amazing. The crowd and the vibes out there were just incredible.
Was there anything about her style or this matchup that maybe you thought would lead to this result, finishing with strikes for the first time, or is that just something that happened in there?
It's just something that happened in there. I'm honestly always hunting for the submission. I wanted to be able to display my ground and pound a little bit better during this fight, which I'm happy I got the chance to. I was using the strikes to open up a submission, but then I heard the ref call. He was like, you need to be more active, Froda. So then I just started throwing as much as I could.
Yes. This is your first TKO victory. Did you learn anything about yourself with that tonight?
I don't necessarily think so. I feel like no matter what, it's just going out there and performing. That's all that I can really hope for, is that I go out there, put on a performance, and I feel like this is the most comfortable I've ever been in the cage. This is the most I've ever really clearly thought in the cage, and I feel like I perform well.
How tight was that first round triangle she had on you?
Oh, it wasn't tight at all. It was actually, in the second round, she had like a little, I don't know, it was like a weird choke, and that one was tighter than the triangle, but with the triangle, I was just kind of hanging out there. I couldn't get her legs off, but I wasn't in any danger.
When we spoke before the fight, you mentioned that you're kind of your own worst critic and you don't want to show anyone your fights. What about this one? Does this make the cut?
I need to watch it. I need to see it. I don't know. It goes by in such a flash when you're in there. Like I said, before, my only performance I've ever been proud of was my one against Molly McCann. I feel like this one, I definitely performed tonight. It's definitely up there.
You did call a second round finish. You called submission. What does it feel like to get the TKO? And you kind of knew it was going to come on top, right?
Yeah, I knew I was going to be on top. I knew I was going to be doing damage the whole time. And like I said, I'm always hunting for the submission. But to get a TKO, it's just to be able to get out of there, it feels incredible.
Jillian, you landed that elbow and got a big cut on her. Did you notice that right away, obviously? And what does seeing damage like that do for your confidence?
Oh, I noticed it in the first round when I got that big cut. And then the second round, I cut her again. And it definitely gives you that confidence boost. You literally smell the blood and just go for the kill.
I think this July, I think it marks the sixth anniversary of your amateur debut. How fast does it feel like to you that your career has advanced since that fight?
Oh, it feels crazy to me that I'm even here. Like, I've been with the UFC almost 2 years now, and it still feels unreal every single time I'm stepping in the cage. I'm 100% blessed to be up here, and I love this more than anything. This is literally my dream job, so just to be able to fight and get paid for it is insane to me.
you have the most wins and finishes now in the history of this weight class. You're still pretty young, though, at 24. How do you think, you want your career to progress? Like, do you feel like you want a top 10 opponent after this? So in top five?
No matter what, I'm trying to stay as active as possible. I'm just trying to get in there as often as possible. I'll take anyone. You know, if they put Dana White in front of me, then if that gets me ranked, I'm taking that fight. You know, no matter what, I'm here to fight everybody in the UFC, and I'm going to work my way to the top.
Is there any discussions had with, like, your management or, you know, you in the UFC about, like, how they want to bring you along? Because at some point, you keep winning fights like this, finishing fights, you're going to, you know, be talked about as a title contender.
We haven't had any discussion about it yet, but like you said, I keep on finishing. I'm going to make a statement in my fights.
I know you talked about being on this like 6 month schedule, but obviously you want to fight a little bit more. Is there a card coming up that you'd be interested in?
I haven't really looked into the future much, but 3 or 4 months and I'll be ready. Like, that'd be the perfect timeline for me. Like, 6 months is way too long for me.
What about as far as like dream locations that you want to compete in? Again, you finally got to get a fight in Canada. Is there any other places that you really, really want to fight in?
It'd be nice to fight in the United States. I feel like I'm flying everywhere for my fight, so it'd be nice to have something a little bit more local. Like, even though this is my home, I'm still from Niagara Falls, so it's still the other side of the country. So if I could maybe find something a little bit more local, that'd be awesome.
How about a name? I know you had a couple in the past, but is anyone really standing out right now?
Not at the moment. I'm just ready for anyone.
All right, the savage Jillian Robertson, man. I am quickly becoming a fan. So, nice work from there. I just had to share that with everybody for anybody that missed it, because that was fun. She makes you smile. I'm sure you guys were all smiling backstage.
Everybody was smiling. It was fun.
Yeah. All right, you came right back in town after your horrible 240, and we got right into the Dana White's Contender Series 22. A couple things that happened here. First of all, let me just give a plug, since we're all together. Give a plug for the pre-show. Myself and Dan Tom have been the on-camera talent. Cole Coffee here has been producing them on the fly, but we do a live pre-show every week for the Contender Series. We do it from 4:15 to 4:45 local, so that's Pacific time, 7:15 to 7:45. We break down the notes. You know, obviously Dan Tom gives his analysis on what he thinks of the prospects. Our own Nolan King, who's a big Contender Series junkie, he always chimes in, sends me some notes that I can share with everybody. He was on vacation in Ireland. He was still sending in notes. That's how much he cares. And you deserve respect, Cold Coffee, man. You're putting this thing together like a TV show, man.
That's how we do.
You're rolling in B-roll. You know, you're showing highlights from the weigh-ins. You're showing packages that the UFC has been nice enough to provide us. I mean, you're basically creating a TV show. Yeah, on a computer and a camera. Like live. I mean, it's like a bootleg television show.
Yeah.
And you're doing a phenomenal job with it. So
it's pretty stressful. Like it gets very stressful, but dude, it's fun. It kind of reminds me of like even when I was at Ohio State Buckeye TV, like putting TV shows together where it was like, you know, super stressful, but you know, when it comes together and it works, it's a lot of fun and it's different, you know, and it's kind of an adrenaline rush when it's working, but when it starts freaking out, then it's like probably one of the most stressful things ever because it's like everything is a split second moment.
Right.
If something starts going, or even like when we're talking, I got to make sure I key up this, you know, and it's all on the little laptop you're doing it, but it's like, you know, when everything's good and it's flowing good and you're able to prep, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Then you roll the video and the whatever.
And it's funny because I'm trying to set up video because, you know, we know what video we have to work with.
Right.
And I'm trying to set up video, but we don't have, like, any way of communicating with each other. So, basically, you're just having to listen to my verbal cues.
Which is what it is.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I'm watching Dan Tom, and then out of the corner of my eye, now you've got a bright light shining on us, and there's overhead lights, too, so I can't see you completely. But out of the peripheral, I'm trying to make sure that, like, I see you lean over and start working because I'm assuming if you're working that you are indeed teeing up the video we're talking about.
Yeah, there's been a couple ones where – because say if I'm depending on how I have it laid out, if I'm playing B-roll on another thing, it's not just as easy sometimes as just clicking the next clip and doing a transition. You have to release the top layer and then cue up the other one down below. So you have to make sure to remember to, okay, deselect this layer and then kick this one before you transition, or what will happen is this top layer stays and the video will keep rolling and then you would just hear the other video roll underneath and it fucks it all up. But yeah, for the most part, there's been a couple of hiccups and it still happens, but no, it's been great so far, and I love the fact that the UFC production team's kind of embraced it and has given us stuff, you know. Yeah. Like I think the features they've been giving us have been getting better and better and they're full-fledged, so it's like, it's nice to be able to lean on their production staff. I'm like, what do you have for me this week?
It's cool. You so know, definitely, so. If you can tune in, dude, we air it live before the Contender Series, and I think it provides nice analysis to kind of set up because let's be honest, most nights if you're tuning in the Contender Series, you probably don't know much about the fighters that are there, and we're at least trying to share some backstories, share some potential strategies, share who's probably the favorite.
Right.
I think it makes it a little bit more entertaining. You kind of know what's at stake. So
people are sort of have their little chat. The only thing is that you guys are working and doing your thing. I'm working, so we don't really have
really
the interaction.
The
you know, we can't really do much of the engagement, but that never seems to be a problem on YouTube. Most people just talk to themselves anyways. You know, everybody kind of entertains themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But that would be the only thing that I would like to be able to figure out. But I think we would need more people.
We just need another body.
You know,
no
to kind of monitor because you just can't keep track of all that sort of stuff. But you know, when you do tune in, listen to the stuff. You know, get the analysis, enjoy it, and then feel free to talk with the trolls and other people that are watching online.
Well,
but for the most part, it's actually been pretty good. Like, I think we have a good group of – I mean, there's always a few people that just want to get in there and rabble-rouse a little bit. But for the most part, I think the Junkie Nation's really good of when they get in there and are watching the show to have educated conversations about the fights, you know. And every once in a while I'll see people talking odds and gambling and stuff. So,
cool.
You know, people using it for their benefit. So
that's cool. I dig it. Well, this past week was pretty good. So, yeah, make sure you join us for our pre-show if you can.
Dana will be on there one of these
weeks. Yeah,
it will happen.
We'll get Dana on there. It's going to be a surprise.
Yeah,
we never know in advance.
Yeah, we've had Julian Marquez on there so far. Yep. But we usually every week I reach out to their staff people to figure out who's coming. Like if there's any big names coming.
We try to sneak in Max Holloway.
We tried to get Max, but unfortunately he didn't show up till 5:15. So it was after the show was finished. So that's the kind of thing that hopefully before this season's over, I'm calling this our first season.
Yeah.
Before this season's over, we'll have some more guests and be able to get in there. But I'm going to go on the record and say Dana will make it one of these.
We've been in conversations, and yes, he seems open to the idea.
He's open to us. We'll have him on there one of these days.
No doubt about it. Well, this past week we saw the big knockout with Elon Cruz. That's got to be one of the best finishes of the Contender Series. I mean, that's one of the best finishes you'll ever see, man. And
yeah,
it was unfortunate because his opponent was fighting very, very well. And, of course, he was fighting out of Fortis MMA as well. So, of course, we pull for those guys. At least I do, you know, as a Dallas guy. I can't help mm-hmm. but hope that those guys do well. And Stephen Wynn was fighting great. The only thing with Stephen Wynn was, I think his and Alan talked about it afterwards, was Wynn was so aggressive and so repetitive in his attack that you knew where he's going to be. And so because that, Cruz was able to counter with that flying knee. That's what, if you haven't seen that one, make sure you go check out, if nothing else, the Cruz knockout of Wynn. You probably saw the highlight. It was number one on SportsCenter. But
was it?
Yeah, number one.
That's awesome.
On the whole night. So really, really cool. And I felt kind of bad for Alexa Kamer afterwards, because he hit a flying knee as well, but he didn't get the clean finish.
Yeah.
He came right after. So he hit the flying knee, and then he hit the punches. You know, I shouldn't say I feel bad. He got a UFC deal, and it looks like he's gonna be tabbed for some good things. But there was such a beautiful, clean, flying knee before that, you know, people didn't make enough out of what he accomplished, I thought.
That was just a great fight. I mean, his face was beat up good. He had taken a good beating from Steve. So that was just a great fight. I think that's why I think when that happened, Dane was just like, sign it up, because you could tell he was into that whole fight. So that was great.
It was a good night, man. It really was. Good. I feel like
it was a good night of fights.
I do feel like this season started off kind of slow.
Yeah, it's some hit and misses.
Up, man. It's picked up.
Yeah.
Great story, and I won't play this. I do want to play a little bit of what Dana had to say afterwards, but I want to talk about something else. But a great story was what he talked about, the fight between Tracy Cortez and Maria Agapova, where he said that, like, you know, they were watching the pre-fight video packages of both girls, and apparently he doesn't watch them either before. He wants to be fresh. He wants to know. And he watched both the video packages, and they say he turned to the matchmakers and was like, man, these stories are so sad. Let's call off the fight and give them both deals. Yeah. You know, he's like, I don't want somebody to have to go home, man. So I thought that was pretty funny. But what I did want to share was Dana White. Afterwards, he always comes and talks to us every week, and for the most part, we try to keep it about Contender Series. I think that's what happened in the past was, you know, he didn't want to come every week and get the full gamut of, well, what about Connor? What about this? So he stopped coming quite as often, to be honest with you. But, you know, we've kind of reached an understanding. We keep it pretty much to the task at hand, and he continues to share his time with us each week. But we did branch out a little bit afterwards and talk a little bit about the future of the Contender Series, the future of the Ultimate Fighter. In fact, Cole Coffey was the one leading the charge on that one. So we'll talk about it in just a second. But before we do, I want to make sure that everybody's heard it. So this is not the full scrum that we had with USC President Dana White after Contender Series, but I trimmed it down just a little bit. And here's some of these key moments of what he had to say about the future of both those series.
Man, what's the mood like after a night like tonight, man? Pretty spectacular. Right?
Yeah, it was a great night. I was just saying to Laura, I mean, the matchmaking is just fucking awesome, man. And to see some of these fights play out, the last fight, I was like, when these two start engaging, this fight's going to be ridiculous. Two big, strong, well-rounded athletes, and boom. Boom, there it was.
I know you always say you can do this every Tuesday night, and I know the matchmakers are like, calm down, but I mean, are they starting to come around a little bit? Or, I mean, as much talent as you're finding, are they saying, well, maybe we can do more of these?
Well, the thing is when you matchmake these type of fights with this type of talent, they're just the pool isn't deep enough to keep doing this, you know, every Tuesday. To do this every week, you just don't have a deep enough pool, especially the quality of people that could get into the UFC and compete here. So, makes it tough.
Will we still have a second run of this? I know you've been
they said no, and I say yes.
Maybe before the end of the year?
Yeah. We'll do a second.
Do you think it'll be Fight Pass only, or have you talked to ESPN?
It'll be Fight Pass, yeah.
Fight Pass?
Yeah. Cool.
Dan, I know you went on record to say, I think before, that the Ultimate Fighter was coming back. Can you kind of tell us again what the status is?
Funny you should ask that. Poligian is here tonight. Poligian came. It's the first time he's seen the facility. I'm going to meet him for dinner right now. So Poligian and I are working on the Ultimate Fighter right now.
Any sort of time frame as when we...
We'll figure that out tonight. Yeah, we're going to dinner. Literally, they're waiting for me for dinner right now.
You think you put it on Fight Pass?
Me, him, and Borsari are going.
Fight Pass?
I don't know. We're working on that.
is that going to be something where you use the coaches' slots as two active fighters to build their fight, or are you going to go more towards the icons of the sport that just can help these young guys learn?
Yeah, well, I think we'll do, we're going to switch some things around, do some things different. But I truly believe that the Ultimate Fighter is so key in building young talent. You know, this show is fun and guys come in, but what they have to go through with cameras in their face 24/7, being away from home, being away from their families and all the bullshit, hardcore training every day with these dream camps that are fucking built, right? Cutting weight, staying on weight, you'll never go through anything harder than the Ultimate Fighter. So if you can make it through the Ultimate Fighter and you actually win it, if you go back throughout history and look at the Ultimate Fighter and the fighters that have come off there, and it just, it's, it is the greatest training ground ever for up-and-coming fighters. It can't go away ever.
Do you think it'll be a tough sell to fighters, though, to go put themselves through all that when they could just come here, win one fight, and be in?
Nah. Nah. It's a big deal. You know, when you come off the Ultimate Fighter, everybody knows who the hell you are immediately. I mean, you have all these weeks of... I mean, when we just left Fox, I mean, the thing's still pulling big numbers. It was the highest-rated show for original programming on Fox for the entire 7 years we were there.
Do you think that that's what the Ultimate Fighter does maybe a little bit better than this, and that you hear the stories, you have a little lead up?
Yeah, you learn more about them. You learn more about them. The fighters have to go through so much more shit. I mean, if you ask anybody who's ever been on the Ultimate Fighter, they would never take it back. They would never take it back. What they went through and what they learned and what they came out with at the end was invaluable. Even people that don't make it to the show demand more money in other in smaller shows. You come off the show and it's like tonight. Like this kid that you know, I feel bad about this kid. You know, I always hate sending people away. But Daniel Rodriguez, he had a good showing tonight. He didn't have a bad showing. He had a good showing. He's 9-1, and he's a free agent right now, right? I just saw that the PFL picked up that other kid that everybody was bitching about that I didn't sign. You know what I mean? So he got picked up. The PFL gets this kid, and everybody knows who he is. He's got a story, and people know. So we'll see if there's interest for him to fight. But
he said it was the biggest deal of his life.
Huh?
He said it was way more money than he's ever made before.
Yeah, and you know, coming on this show, whether you make it or don't make it, just like the Ultimate Fighter, is huge. I mean, we look at the numbers. When Sean O'Malley fought in the Contender Series, 3.3 million people watched him fight. So right off that show, I don't know if you remember, it was like right, either the next fight or the one after it, I co-main evented him. Fucking 3.5 million people watching him fight. He co-main evented, coming right off the Contender Series. So win, lose, or draw on this show is good for you.
Is that like total views? Like, that yeah. People go back and watch it? Uh-huh. It's kind of uh-huh.
To the to date, right now, okay. 3.5 million people saw Sean O'Malley fight in the Contender Series.
Because you said, you know, that we don't do a good job at promoting these stories beforehand, so right. You know, getting people to talk to people yeah. Live is
but the Contender Series has been fucking killing it. But let me put it into perspective for you. 3.3 million people watched O'Malley. Yusuf did 3-point-something million. And Olisco, I can't remember everybody in line, but we have them all lined up. And Greg Hardy's first fight, he did 1.6 million viewers.
Wow.
So, it's fucking huge. Think about that. These guys that come in here, nobody knows who they are. And those are the numbers that these guys are pulling.
All right, welcome back to MMA Rough Show. That was UFC President Dana White. Should say, by the way, if you like what you're listening, do us a favor. Take a moment. Log into iTunes. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars if you can. We'd appreciate that. It helps us grow. helps people know this is a quality MMA program. And if you can leave some feedback, I always like to hear the comments as well. Even if it's, you know, even if it's constructive criticism, we'll take that. I'll take it. Cole Coffey gets kind of upset at the constructive criticism.
Is that constructive?
I would like glowing praise.
Was that constructive? What was that?
Yeah. I would like glowing praise, just a shout out to say, hey, bro, we've been listening for so long. We like you. Just take a second. It helps us out. It helps us grow. Dude, all right.
Now, isn't iTunes still going away? They're still going to redo it. I think they're revamping it. Remember I was telling you iTunes is going away?
I do remember you saying that.
But go there and review it before it happens. Because, yeah, they're supposed to – the way that it's going to display it. Like, I think the standalone app deal that everybody's used to or that whatever is going to go away.
Interesting.
The podcast will be a little area. The music will be a certain thing or whatever.
But we still need good reviews.
But you still need reviews.
So go help us out. All right. All right. So listen, a couple things there, and some of it directed by you. First of all, I do like the fact that he did commit to the fact that there will be a second run of Contenders. If you'll remember, when they announced this ESPN partnership, what they said with Contenders was there'll definitely be one and maybe two. They went from 8 weeks to 10 weeks, and so I think a lot of people thought, okay, there's not going to be a second run. And Dana said, oh, no, we're going to do another run of Contender Series this year, and we'll do it on UFC Fight Pass, which I did because I love doing the Contender Series. But I, to be honest with you, had kind of thought the Ultimate Fighter had fallen by the wayside. I mean, we know it's Dana's passion project, and we know he was always like, oh, it's great. But I kind of thought, well, nobody ever picked it up, so they're going to let this thing go away. But you brought it up, and it turns out that he's actually meeting with Craig Piligian.
Which is a big – that was a big one. I was surprised. Like, I actually wondered if Piligian was ever going to do anything with the Contender Series, like if they ever – we're like, hey, do you have any thoughts of what we're doing here and maybe things we could do? And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he does, you know, put his take on what they can maybe do. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dude is every really cool show that you've ever really seen, like on, the Deadliest Catch and like all those kind of shows. I think a lot of those have ties to him. So, I mean, like, the guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to, like, reality shows and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, it was just interesting timing that, you know, we talked about. And he's like, oh, I'm going to dinner with him. I was like, oh, shit. Because I remember he had said something a while back, like, it was coming back. But I felt like we hadn't heard anything about it.
So I kind of assumed it kind of just died its death and they let it go. And listen, they're going to have to make some changes. It can't be the same format. The format's played out. But I will say some of it – I don't agree with Dana – that it's going to be easy to get fighters on the program. Because I think if I'm a fighter or I'm a manager, I say, why have my guy sequestered for 6 weeks? You know what I mean? I mean, I guess it depends on the type of person you are. I mean, maybe if you're a fighter that has a big personality, maybe it makes sense for you to be on that show versus a guy that's just a fighter. I mean, there are things about it. But I will say, the things that Dana said are true.
Yeah, the backstories, the lead up,
the
branding, like
that part,
it is huge. I mean, like every one of these guys that comes, and he admitted they do a piss poor job when it comes to telling the story of the people that are coming up, the Contenders. I'm like, nobody has access to these people. We have no idea who's really going to be there. You know what their story is, but when you watch the Ultimate Fighter, you find out about their backstories through their confessionals. And then other little stories and other little clips. So you learn about their lives outside, but you also get the backstory of what's happening to them inside the house. So there's a lot of drama and stuff that sort of just leads up. I think there's just ways it could tweak. We even talked about it too, like, you know, whether it be multiple fights on a night. Maybe it doesn't need to be as long if you know that you're having two fights a night or something.
Two fights on an episode would be good. I mean, they're going to have to tweak it a little
bit. They got to tweak something.
I'm not necessarily smart enough as a TV executive to tell them what it is. I don't know. But, yeah, that same format, you know, you say, oh, it helps get their story out there. Well, not if nobody's watching it. You know what I mean? Right. And so it will be good filler content to have on Fight Pass. And, you know, apparently they're making some big moves and some changes to Fight Pass later this year. So, you know, I do think there's a place for it. I really do. I think even they would admit behind the scenes that they're going to have to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, and I think with the new facility, who knows? I mean, I think if they're able to, in the process of revamping it, they're cutting costs, it certainly makes it a lot more viable for them to keep it going. So I'm sure with the new addition of the facility and being able to do some neat things there, they're probably excited to see what they can do, knowing that they have a brand new building that they could do stuff that they've never been able to do before. So it's interesting. I think they'll definitely be, and if there's cost cut involved as well, I can definitely see where they're like, well, we at least got to give it another go to see what it's like since we have the new facility, see what they can do with it in a facility that's built for having those live fights. I mean, the other old Tough, they had to eventually go in and they set up all the lighting rigs, you know,
right.
And then they have all the other exit spaces that don't have the facilities really for them to do it. They just kind of work around it. But this building was built in mind with the fact of being able to have live fights and other stuff there. So it'd be interesting. To see what they could do. But I mean, I think they need to condense it. I think it was too long. And I think the one fight a night stuff is just, especially after looking at what works for the contender, you're getting people to watch five fights in one night in a condensed little, it's a longer night, but I mean, I think there's a way that they can speed it up where they don't have to have as long a season, still be able to tell the story and just have more action. I think they need more.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the Ultimate Fighter lacks compared to the contender. The contender is just pure action.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pure fights. I mean, there's not a lot of BS. It's just fight, fight, fight.
I think we were kind of talking about this the other night after the scrum and our good buddy Oscar Willis at the Mac Live. I think he was the one that said, what about going back to live fights? And that would be cool with that. Two bad things about the live season that I remember, and I loved the live season because it was cool. Like, you're watching live fights. It was like a precursor to the Contender Series, right? I loved it. There were two things that were a little concerning about it. One was the length of the season because, you know, before you could have three fights a week, but you air that over 3 weeks. You know,
right.
Now you've actually got to have one fight a week. And, you know, I guess that wouldn't be the case if it's on Fight Pass, so maybe they could condense it down a little bit so you weren't having to do one episode a week. So if they can change the schedule, that would be good because I think those guys ended up being in the house like 15 weeks or something like that. It's way too long.
It's way too long.
The other thing was I remember Ally Quinta was in a tough fight to get into the finals, and I think like I remember like the media day because it was like he won a semifinal, and then a week later he's got a fight in the finals. And I remember his face was kind of busted up a little bit, his eye was busted up, you know. So maybe you put a little gap between the semifinals and the finals. I know you don't want to lose that momentum. I know you want to keep it going. But maybe not have them.
How many fighters do they usually have in the house?
Well, it depends. Sometimes they do. Usually eight. Usually eight? Just eight. Yeah. Sometimes they've done 16, but usually just eight. But I think the live season they did 16, if I remember right, which is one of the reasons it took so damn long.
Just wondering if there's a way they can, if they say they did want to do it live, say if they even condensed it down to 4 weeks or whatever, or find some way to. It is now. It's sort of like a tournament
right. In
the sense that they, you know, they fight and then they. You know, that person's gone and you move up in the bracket or whatever. But I wonder if there's a way to make it more, say if it was a live fight, say if it was condensed, but have multiple fights in the night that somehow works like the tournament. I don't know if it's maybe like how Bellator did their tournament function, but you could have multiple fights that maybe settles the West bracket,
right.
You know, on this particular evening. And then the next episode is the, you know, the East bracket, you know,
right.
and find some way to have multiple fights that happen that set up the next weeks. So you already kind of know, instead of just take the whole, like, coaching, you know, once the bracket gets, you know, you have your coaches, they pick it, they get their seeds or whatever, and then the bracket breaks down and whatever the pick that they put these people in,
right.
that's their seeding.
Yeah.
And just put it in. So then each week you don't have to have the drama of, you know, so-and-so is going to pick, and I'm going to put him up against whatever
because you
already know the bracket's
laid out.
Yeah, you just have a
field that's laid out there. Yeah,
and then just have it start working through what the bracket's
laid
out or something.
I would work. I dig that. You know, and I always thought too, when they were doing the live season, I always thought it'd be cool. Like, what if you did, like, and now that you got the Apex, which is obviously a much nicer facility,
yeah.
Like, what if you did, like, one tough fight and then, like, one or two real UFC fights, like actual UFC fights, like rostered fighters fight. You know what
right.
I mean? I thought that might be a way to keep interest high, to have people watching. The other thing I always, and I don't think they would ever do this, but I did, you know, kind of steal like an example from like European soccer, like have like two guys that are on the bubble of being cut, like winner stays, loser's gone. You know what I mean? Like fighting for a UFC contract.
Right.
I don't know. So there's things. I don't know. That's crazy way outside the box. But I don't know. I know a lot of people, it's easy. Oh, just poop on the Ultimate Fighter. I get it. I hate it. But I think if they tweak it a little bit, man,
yeah.
I'm down.
I think it's because it's just such a long investment.
Right.
Everybody burns out before the over. So they have to shorten it. I think just – people's attention spans are much, much less. And it's a long ask. I mean, I barely can keep up with the shows I'm already into, you know, like, and if it wasn't for DVR, and then you sort of binge.
Yep.
And unfortunately with this, it's like you don't really get that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe they'll condense it a little bit. Maybe that's what they'll do.
They have to.
All right, let's talk about some one last kind of outside-the-box thing. WXC80 was on UFC Fight Pass. I wrote up a feature. It's actually still on the lead section of MMA Junkie right now.
You must have been running the site.
I suspect, yeah, it's because I was running the site this morning. I suspect it won't be later. But if you want to Google it later, if you didn't see this, the title of his video, Complete Chaos Hits WXC80 Cage, Courtesy of a Sneaky Pete. This was great. I was watching WXC. They do once a month shows on Wednesday nights. This was Warrior Wednesday 5. And a guy from Extreme Couture right around the street, Juan Camilo Ronderos, had a fight in the main event, vacant flyweight titles on the line. And he hits this arm lock that I've never seen before. It was crazy. And breaks the kid's arm. And later it's announced as the Sneaky Pete, which there's a whole story behind that. And you got to read the text to check it out. But interestingly enough, so he breaks the guy's arm. And then chaos ensues because as they're being split up, he starts punching the other guy again. Even though he just broke his arm, he starts punching at him. Come to find out there was a reason for it. And I won't ruin it. So if you haven't seen the video, go check it out. I think the story came out nice, and we put a highlight video in there courtesy of UFC Fight Pass. But it was actually really funny. Cody Gibson hit me up on Twitter, and he was like, my first pro loss was to that exact same move 9 years ago. Or he just said, my first pro loss was to that move. And then somebody else chimed in on Twitter and said, I think John Morgan was doing commentary on that one. And sure enough, I went back. It was a Tachi Palace fight event from 9 years ago, and I remember it now. I was on the call, and the guy that beat him was a guy named David Balea, who actually works over at Syndicate now. He works the desk there and trains as well, obviously. And I remember because at the time he just called it like the Balea arm lock, and I can't remember it. Obviously, 9 years and a lot of fights ago,
yeah.
I can't remember it as crystal clear if it was exactly the same technique, but it did kind of make me laugh and feel old. That was 9 years ago.
But this guy called it the Sneaky Pete.
He called it the Sneaky Pete. So at that time, he just called it a Balea arm lock. So anyway, check that story out. I think it came out nice. And like I said, we got the video to accomplish. It was a cool little highlight. All right, real quick, let's talk about this weekend. UFC on ESPN 5 is coming up. I'm excited about it for one very, very specific reason. It's early. Super, super early in the morning. This fight originally, if you remember, was supposed to take place in Russia, which is pretty intriguing. It's supposed to take place in Russia. They ended up not having it in Russia, so they moved it to New Jersey. But ESPN already has like their whole like block of programming played out. They've got a schedule, so it's like, dude, we've already got this carved out for you. We've got 100 other sports going on.
This starts at 9 a.m., huh?
9 a.m. Pacific,
wow.
12 p.m. Eastern. So fights first thing
that
in the morning
early.
On Saturday. I'm excited about it. Colby Covington versus Robbie Lawler in the main event. Listen, we've thought a lot. If you're a longtime listener of The Road Show, you get it with Colby Covington. He is not behind the scenes what he is in front of the scenes. He's definitely playing a character, and I think he plays it very well because I see the amount of hate that he gets on our site. And I as a guy whose game is really – I mean, look, his game is impressive. It's the cardio that he has, the pressure that he puts on you, the wrestling. It's impressive in terms of physical prowess, but it's not what casual fans like to see. Casual fans want to see Robbie Lawler, right, coming out there looking to drop you with big shots. That's what they want to see. But Colby Covington has been able to get himself to this level, and I'm very, very intrigued by this matchup. Robbie Lawler is incredibly dangerous, even at this point in his career. It's amazing to think how young he is when he's been in for as long as he's been in the game. But I'll be honest, it's almost to me a Tony Ferguson situation where I feel like Colby got wrong to a degree, and I know not many people are going to go to bat for Colby Covington.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that everything he does is appropriate. I'm not trying to say he doesn't step over the line from time to time. But I do feel like Colby Covington, much like Tony Ferguson, got wronged, man. He had an interim title. And then, kind of going back to the discussion we were having earlier, he can't fight when you want him to fight. And ironic, because I think the month you used was August earlier. I think it was August that they wanted him to fight, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, he couldn't fight when they wanted him to fight. And now, all of a sudden, you're not a champion anymore. And I just feel like I hope he wins this fight. I'm pulling for him because I just feel like that's justice for what he deserves. He would get that title shot with Kamaru Usman, which, by the way, the buildup between Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman. Yes, it might get cringy at times, but it'll definitely be exciting.
Yeah, it'll definitely get some clicks for sure. Yeah. There's definitely some heat between those two. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Colby was slighted. I mean, it as much as people now just love to flame on the dude because he puts himself out there in a way where sometimes you're just like, dude, that's so cringy. I can't look at you. But you're right. From what we've seen or what I've seen, what he does when the camera's on and then what he does when you're in a hotel room after and nothing's rolling, it's a different person.
Yep.
But yeah, no, that should be a great fight, man. I'm looking forward. I mean, Robbie is just like the silent assassin, man. He's just like, I'm not going to talk shit. I'm just going to walk forward and smash your face in.
And I love it.
That should be an incredible fight. But
and let's just say this. I mean, this whole narrative of Robbie Lawler turned on American Top Team. I mean, that is 100% invented by Colby Covington. You know what I mean? That was just invented as an angle to share a fight. That is definitely not what's at stake here.
Yeah. No, I mean, Robbie, if he wanted to go back there, could go back anytime he
Absolutely.
Wants to.
I did. But I'm excited for this fight. I think it's a big one. Again, it is a clash of styles. Look, Robbie's defensive wrestling is good, so it's not like he's one of these strikers. You know, he's not a Melvin Manhoef, for instance, you know, not to disrespect Melvin, but just the first name that came to mind of a guy that can drop bombs, but is probably not going to be able to defend a single takedown. You know, that's not Robbie. He's going to be able to defend against Colby Covington. Covington is going to have to chain things together. It's not going to be as simple as, well, I'll just duck in and grab a single leg. Or
he's going to have to strike. At some point, he's going to be striking. It's going to be stood up, and it's going to be standing, and we're going to get to see. We're going to see how hard he's been working on that striking. But, yeah, man, that's a good card.
It is. This doesn't have the big sexy matches, but there's some names I definitely want to pay attention to that we'll kind of talk about real quick as we look down the card, some things to look out for. Clay Guida and Jim Miller in the co-main event. I mean, come on, dude. That's just
fun.
Do it for the old fellas. This doesn't mean anything in terms of rankings. I mean, Jim Miller is admitting, he knows the end is near, but here he is fighting in his home state of New Jersey. That's big. And Clay Guida, I mean, these are two of the most veteran dudes in the world and two of the nicest, coolest dudes ever. I think they're going to put on a fun fight. I'm digging that. And listen, Nazrat Hakprast, I think is a talented cat, man. That's of course the mini Gastelum, if you need to remember.
He does kind of look like him.
You're crazy. That's mini Gastelum, no question about it. Against Neto BJJ Joaquim Silva, who had a big knockout win over Jared Gordon last time out. But I think Hakparas is the guy to watch here, man. I really do feel like he's a talented cat. Trevin Giles versus Jared Millshart, that could be a fun fight. Scott Holtzman, we're always
hot sauce.
Come on, man. How can you not cheer for hot sauce? But Dong Young Ma will come in there and bang. You know, I think Holtzman is the better fighter, but Dong Young Ma will make it a big fight. So, you know, I think all those three, that trio of fights there, is exciting. I think it's going to be a good main card. And then Kennedy and Jakubu, who did not have a great UFC debut, but I think does have some talents against Darko Stosic. Kennedy wants to redeem himself a little bit. Of course, another Fortis MMA product. As a Dallas man, I'm always going to cheer for those guys a little bit extra. But that main card, Cole Coffey, what are you most keyed up for? What are you most excited for?
Well, definitely the battle of the vets. Guida and Miller is one I think is going to be really cool. Holtzman, Dong Young Ma, I think that's going to be a good one. He's still with Ruby, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's always fun to watch Hot Sauce and root for old Ruby Entertainment or Ruby
Ruby Sports Entertainment.
Ruby Sports Entertainment, his guys. Fan of the road show, so I always love to give some love to his dudes. But you're right, I actually picked Kennedy, so I think
I did too.
He's got a big frame. I think in the past,
huge.
I just feel like he's almost afraid to use it. He just doesn't use it right. But I know working with Fortis, and at this point, I'm looking forward to see what he's done to kind of turn that around. But of course, I'm super excited for the main event. But yeah, top to bottom, I think that main card is really, really good.
I think it's going to be exciting. Yeah, you're right about Kennedy. If you go back and watch, and of course, you know, if you hear Coach Saif Saud, man, he was just yelling like crazy because he couldn't get Kennedy to
let
go. But, you know, Mike Bond sat down with Kennedy this week, and I thought it was great that he admitted. He was like, dude, the pressure got to me and I froze, man. He's like, octagon jitters. It messed me up and I'm good this time. So I think he's going to have a better showing. And yeah, of course, as you said, the main event. Now, here's where it gets interesting because I think there's some really good fights on the prelims here. Mickey Gall of course, had a bad go last time out against Diego Sanchez, but, you know, there were some medical problems behind the scenes. He's looking to redeem himself. He stepped in on short notice. He's a New Jersey guy, so this one means a lot to him. Lucy Pudovla, as when she fought in the Czech Republic, she was Lucia Pudovla. But she's fighting Antonina Shevchenko.
I'm stoked for that one.
Oh, that's going to be a fight.
That should be fun.
If you're not familiar with Pudovla, hopefully you see it. She scraps. This girl bangs. And this
Terminator.
Is going to be a stand-up battle. She's going to be in Shevchenko's face. Shevchenko, of course, you think she'll be the longer fighter. She's the more polished striker. But, of course, she had the loss to Roxanne Modafferi that she'll be looking to rebound from. And I think that will be an absolute stand-up battle. Jordan Espinosa versus Matt Schnell, a flyweight fight, if you can believe that. I love that. I think that's going to be a good one there. Mara Romero-Bilelli versus Lauren Murphy. Of course, Lauren is returning from a year off, so that's a big women's fight there. Claudio Silva, I was really surprised to see this fight so low on the card. Last week, like with Pantoja and Figueroa, I kind of understood it. You know, I mean, on pay-per-views, it's different, right? Because you've got to put some little taste out there to get people to want to buy the pay-per-view, right? So I kind of understood that. I kind of defended that one. This one, I mean, I guess they're all on ESPN, so there's not – maybe it doesn't even matter where fights are because they're all, literally the prelims and the main are all on ESPN. But Claudio Silva, man, seems like a dangerous dude to me. I think he's got an impressive record. Of course, he had the long layoff, but he's rebounded in fine fashion. He's facing a newcomer now, Cole Williams. I was really surprised to see Claudio Silva so low down on the card. And then, of course, the late addition of the female fight that I'm really, really excited for.
Yeah.
Hannah Goldie versus Miranda Granger. Of course, I actually got to call Miranda Granger's last fight. Her last fight was in the Cage Fury Fighting Championships, which, by the way, I'll be back out there 2 weeks from now to call another show. But she impressed the heck out of me, both with her ability, her mindset, the way she speaks.
That was a title fight as well, right?
Yep, all it was. And she took the belt, had an opportunity to go on the Contender Series. I had heard that she wasn't even sure if she wanted to go on the Contender Series. She felt like maybe she was a blue-chip prospect, and it paid off. Here she is. She's in the UFC against Hannah Goldie. Hannah Goldie, of course, we saw her on the Contender Series as well. She came out, looked good, but just didn't have a fight that necessarily impressed as much as I think she can. I think this is going to be different because I think Miranda Granger is going to be in her face. I think it's going to be a very good. Miranda is aggressive. Hannah was fighting a lot on the back foot last time. She clearly won the fight, but Miranda is going to move forward, make it a fight. So I'm really, really looking forward to that one to kick off the night. But I kind of tipped my hand. But one or two of those, the one you're most hyped for.
I'm stoked for the Granger fight. Yep. Yeah. So that one should be good. Let's see. Let me pull that card back up. I flipped over. I was reading Granger's story, and then I started. I went down.
Put you on the spot. You thought I was going to close out without you.
I went down that pigeonhole.
You thought I was going to close out without you.
I know. Well, I was actually. I started going.
Well, I know you. I know you're looking forward to Pudula Shevchenko. You're definitely looking forward to that.
Hands down, is probably my favorite one from the prelim card. Did Goldie get signed, or is she one of the ones that just made it back?
She just made it back.
See, that's what people always forget, is the fact that everybody's like, oh man, like they didn't get signed on the Contender Series. Half of the people that don't get signed on the Contender Series still get a fight.
That's right.
And I thought that's what I was trying. I was actually trying to go down and look at Goldie because, like, I don't remember getting signed, but here she is.
She won every round. She didn't win it in the type of fashion that got her signed that night. But yeah, here she is fighting before any of them. Fighting before any of the other ones.
Yeah. So yeah, actually, when I look at the prelim card, I'm very excited about both the women's fight, and then I think the Matt Schnell Jordan Espinosa should be pretty spot on.
That's a
good card.
I have guaranteed. Now, I will say this: we are a little bit short-staffed on Saturday. Now, I'm not trying to get myself out of anything right here, but it is kind of intriguing. Let's see. Oh no, you know what? I'm actually thinking about the next week. Never mind. I'll take it all back. I've already tipped my hand for next week, but I'm still going to try to get one. We're pretty short-handed on the Uruguay fight. We got a lot of people on vacation. Everybody.
The what fight?
No, the Uruguay. You want me to say Uruguay?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
I do.
Uruguay. Uruguay.
That's what I was taught in school.
The Shevchenko fight, I think, unfortunately, I think a lot of people on our site took advantage of the fact that we will not, unfortunately, have anybody there, knowing that we weren't going to have on-site coverage. And so we're a little bit short next week. This week we're not short, and it's early. So, yeah, this week it'll be Matt, Steven, not Simon Head. He'll be working in the morning. Nolan, myself, you, Mike Bond will be on site. So we'll have plenty of time to get everything done. And I promise the return of Anna Half. Now, I don't know if Cole Coffey's going to be a part of it or not. I think he will be. I think he will be.
Oh, yeah, you're going to come. You're going to come find me.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I drive over here, or maybe I even work from here. I don't know. Who knows?
Oh, it is earlier too.
It's early. That's what I'm saying. The fights will be over by like six. No, the fights will be over by like 3 o'clock.
I was thinking about smoking some ribs.
See,
I picked up some pork ribs. So if you want to come over, I'll be smoking ribs. Maybe they'll be done by the time we get
ribs.
Done. So by the time we finish the event, have some ribs.
Nice. I bought an air fryer.
I want to get one.
I just got it in today. I'll let you know how that goes.
How big is it?
Like 5 quarts, I think. Okay, it's a big one. It's a ninja one. Haven't tried it out yet. I don't know why I brought that up. I just, you know, it's, you know, I mean, look, I'm only going to be so healthy, but I figure at least if I can have wings and beer, but it's air fried wings and beer.
Healthier wings. That's not bad. Yeah, you have to let me know, because I know I've looked at some of those ones, and I'm always like, I think I saw one that was like 8 quart, and one was 6 quart or whatever, and it's like they never look big enough. But I think it's one of those things where it's deceiving, where they're bigger than what they seem. So no, I'm looking forward to see how it works for you.
All right. So maybe smoked ribs, and a half. We'll see. We're gonna make it happen, but it's gonna return. It's definitely gonna happen. The next week I'm gonna try to do it then too. I think I can do it. Cold coffee is gonna help me so that maybe I can even do it on days that he can't, so we can still have some post-fight content, because I enjoy talking to fight. So we'll have that coming on Saturday. In the meantime, thanks for listening.